To a large extent, the legal needs facing lower-income Utah households serves as a barometer of the strains facing those households overall. So getting a handle on what those needs are and the extent to which they are being met becomes critical to philanthropic and governmental decision-making. This is all the more true at a time of crisis like today. A new report from Utah Foundation goes in depth on the question of legal needs, and our Vice President and Research Director, Sean Tigan, is a principal author of that report. In this podcast, Sean sits down with a former Chief Justice of the Utah Supreme Court and a bankruptcy attorney who also happens to be the incoming chair of the Utah Bar Foundation. This is Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast.
In April, Utah Foundation released a report entitled The Justice Gap, Addressing the Unmet Legal Needs of Lower-Income Utahns. The report was commissioned by the Utah Bar Foundation to look at the legal needs of lower-income Utahns, or the roughly 26% of Utah's population living at or below 200% of the federal poverty line. The report included a random sample survey of Utahns, as well as data from a whole host of other sources. So I'll start the discussion off by noting a few of the key findings in that report. First, most people do not have representation in civil legal cases in Utah. So of the 62,000 debt collection cases, nearly 100% of petitioners or plaintiffs have lawyers, compared to only about 2% of respondents or defendants. For the 14,000 eviction cases, you see about the same kind of results. 90% of petitioners have lawyers compared to only about 5% of respondents who have lawyers. We also found that more than two-thirds of Utah's lower-income survey respondents indicated that they could not afford a lawyer even if they needed one. And fewer than one in five Utah lawyers offer discounted fees and rates for persons of modest means or a sliding scale based on income. So today I'll be speaking with two guests. One is former Utah Supreme Court Chief Justice Christine Durham, who serves as a co-chair on the Access to Justice Commission for the Utah State Bar. The other is attorney and incoming chair of the Utah Bar Foundation, Peggy Hunt. She is also a panel trustee for Chapter 7 bankruptcy cases, and we'll be talking a lot more about that. So the report looked at a variety of legal needs issues, including healthcare, housing, finances, family law, employment issues, discrimination, immigration, and more. To kick off the conversation, what do many of these issues have in common in terms of how they affect lower income households?
Well, I can lead off on that, and Peggy will have a perspective as well. One of the common factors is the fact that a large number of people do not realize that the problems they have a legal dimension at all. And so they don't even understand the likelihood in many cases that they need help with the legal side of it. The other thing that all of them have in common is the extreme paucity of available resources to address their legal needs once they're identified. You talked about the representation in court level, but if you even go below that, even if you just took the representation question, it's very clear that here in Utah, as is true nationally, it is not in the realm of reality that we can, as a legal profession, volunteer our way out of this huge justice gap. If every lawyer in America were to donate their full-time billable hours on an annual basis, it is unlikely that we could begin to meet the representation gap. That's an important thing, public service and pro bono representation, as we talk about it, is important for lawyers to do, but for us to think that that's the way we're going to solve this problem is unrealistic and in the end not helpful. We've got to find other ways of addressing the gap.
And I agree with everything that Justice Durham has just said, and don't have much to add other than that the problems that you see, especially around debt issues, are really societal problems. They have to do with issues that are a lot larger than the law. And they come down to, in my mind, just the way the policy decisions that we're making as a country and how we address those issues, whether with laws or with money put into societal or safety net programs. These are all issues that are a lot bigger than any one statute or any one person or any one profession.
Three big things came out of your answers here. One is, how do you kind of address this issue that people don't know that there's a legal dimension to the issues that they're having? Like, is there something that we can do as maybe the policymakers or as lawyers, or is there something we can do to kind of address that?
Well, there's a huge list of things we could do. One of the things that we can do is something that is being explored by the Utah Supreme Court in connection with its regulatory reform considerations. The court is currently looking at ways, and I have to add that we're really the lead state in the country on this. But the idea is, for example, when someone runs into a housing problem, if that individual can be directed to, for example, an entity, maybe a nonprofit, maybe a publicly supported entity that specializes in housing-related problems, that person could encounter non-lawyers at the sort of triage level and at the entry level to explain to them what the legal dimensions of the problem are, what the social dimensions of the problem are, and what the economic dimensions are, and then guide them to resources that don't necessarily require lawyer input, but definitely require legal input. And so the idea that you could train social workers in the housing arena or the immigration arena or the bankruptcy arena, where people could get upfront advice, certainly in the eviction situation, it would be enormously helpful. And actually, the Utah State Bar has some projects that are working on that right now, even within the regulatory scheme that we currently have, where people could get help filling out forms, where they can get assessments on their circumstances. For example, in evictions, if you have a good defense, you need legal help to bring it into the court setting. If you don't have a good legal defense, you're far better off cooperating with the creditor and getting a reasonable judgment than defaulting and ending up with piled on fees and a debt much higher than you started with.
And all your personal belongings taken.
And all your personal belongings on the dock, exactly.
Right.
That's just one example of something we could do, and there are many.
You also, Justice Durham, mentioned that we can't volunteer our way out of this gap. So there's this, in the report that we released at Utah Foundation, we found this gap of somewhere around 200,000 legal issues that are not being taken care of by various legal need organizations. So what is it we need to do if we can't volunteer our ways out of that? What are some ways of approaching the gap?
Well, Peggy mentioned societal problems, and she might want to say more about what other resources from, when we talk about safety nets, the source of safety nets, yes, there are nonprofits, but there also have to be sound public policies included in legislation. And I know Peggy works in the bankruptcy area, so she probably has some notion of what we could do to help that population.
Honestly, I believe that there's real societal issues here that bankruptcy is meant to address, and it is a way for people to address their debt issues. However, it's usually a place of last resort. Mm-hmm. And there could be ways that people could be alleviating the issues that arise that lead up to the bankruptcy prior to that. But I think this comes back to what you were talking about, Justice Durham, with the issue of right now, we have a regulatory system that monitors who is allowed to practice law, and only licensed attorneys are allowed to practice law. And you can run into significant problems if you're providing legal advice and you're not a licensed attorney. And so loosening that requirement in a responsible way that allows people who are on the front lines, the people who are in the social services area, to be able to recognize that this is a legal issue, provide limited help, and direct the person to the resources that they need is really important. Right now, I think a lot of social service organizations and groups, and even law students, feel stymied in their ability to provide access to justice in the way of just recognizing, knowing that the person has a legal problem, but not being able to advise them on that. And so I think, you know, the regulatory reform that is being proposed has some really interesting components to it, and something that we need to be exploring, especially in this age of, you know, any, if you have a computer, you can get on and maybe, you know, get forms or whatever. It's important that we be reevaluating what is realistic for our population in receiving legal services. Does it only have to come from attorneys?
Right. And if it does, it's not going to happen, because as the comment about the, you know, the average cost of full-blown legal services is simply out of reach for people at a certain income level, even if they understand they need help. I'd like to mention, you know, when you look at the Justice Gap Report, so-called financial issues are over 50% of the sort of workload that's been identified of unmet legal needs. Turns out when you break that down, it pretty much translates to debt of one kind or another, or to financial issues that have been caused by debt. And I recently listened to a presentation of an entity out of Arizona, which is working on medical debt specifically. Their statistics suggest that almost half of debt-related problems stem from medical debt, and that's been exacerbated by the pandemic, because people, A, they've lost their jobs, so they've lost their insurance, so they have no way to cover their medical expenses, or they never had insurance, but they have no choice about trying to live versus being concerned about their health and safety. It is believed that that's going to increase the size of that portion of debt in society. And so our Access to Justice Commission, which was set up not to be a service provider, but to try to get a handle on being able to identify all or most of the resources that are out there, and then also to do work and research on trying to generate best practices and good policy. And so we've decided to focus on the financial problems aspect of the Justice Gap Report, and to focus specifically on debt. One of the things that we're realizing is that it's got tentacles that reach into people's lives in just a horrendous way. I mean, you might get through an eviction, but the debt that gets piled on, if you haven't had good advice and you have a big debt, that's going to affect your employment opportunities, your future housing opportunities, just everything about your life.
So I can't agree more with that. As you mentioned earlier, Sean, I serve as a panel trustee, and that's a person who is appointed by the Justice Department to administer Chapter 7 bankruptcy cases, which are liquidation cases. In these types of cases, we look at their assets and their liabilities and determine if there are any assets available to pay creditors. And if they're not, the debtor basically gets what we call a fresh start through a discharge and moves on with their life. And we close the case as a no asset case. If the person who files bankruptcy has assets, then we administer those assets and pay creditors a pro rata share of the liquidation proceeds of those assets. And again, the person who files the bankruptcy, unless there's fraud involved, will get what we call the discharge and get a fresh start and be able to move on with their lives. And as part of that job, one of my big tasks as a trustee is to preside over what we call creditors meetings, meetings of creditors. And in these situations, the person who files bankruptcy comes in, we swear them in, and they have to give testimony under oath in front of all of their creditors, if their creditors choose to appear, explaining what their debts and liabilities are. And it is from the information that they provide in sworn papers, as well as their testimony, that I use to determine whether or not there's fraud involved or whether or not there's assets to administer for creditors. And as part of this process, I see typically anywhere between 40 to 80 people a day on the days of meetings of creditors. I'm swearing them in and quickly going through their lives with them. For many people, it's incredibly humiliating and incredibly, it's like the worst day of their life. In my view, my goal is to find out that they're being truthful, figure out what I can do for their creditors, and to get them through the process as humanely as possible. And you know, keep their respect, let them know that I respect them and that they just need to move on with their lives. You know, when I'm talking to folks, it's given me such a snapshot into the problems that arise as to debt. As Justice Durham said, the tentacles are everywhere. I mean, it could be that there was divorce that created the debt problems. It could be a child who breaks their arm in an emergency care visit that ends up with a huge amount of medical debt that the family just could not foresee and could not have paid in any event. There are so many issues that feed into the debt-related problems that we have. Another one is that I'm seeing a lot right now is the unaffordability of housing in our community. It is a huge problem. I get all the information about what the person makes, how many kids they have, what their household income is. I also get the information on what they're paying in rent and this. I have no idea how some people are even able to afford living in our community. And then there's the huge elephant in the room, which is the fact that we don't pay living wages. This is the biggest issue that I see.
Right.
It's not a living wage. It's not a system that is sustainable for everyday working people. And
the other elephant in the room, of course, is healthcare. And the only good thing, in my view, that the pandemic has done is to lay bare mm-hmm. the terrible circumstances we live under in the United States with respect to healthcare. And when you think about half of that debt being medical expenses, you have to understand that we could eliminate or at least alleviate half of that debt burden in our state if we had some form of universal health care, so that employed people didn't lose their benefits when they lose their jobs, and people who didn't have benefits to start with would at least have basic health care services. One of the things that we hope to do in our commission's work on debt collection is to come up with policy papers. We're not going to be in a position to lobby or to be sort of advocates at the legislature and other places because we're an arm of the state bar, but we think we can identify things that need to change. And I realize that universal health care and a living wage might be a stretch.
Those are the big ones.
Yeah, that's right. But at the same time, we can identify best practices in debt assessment, in counseling, in the use of services that aren't as expensive as lawyer services. There are a lot of things you can do in handling some of these debt collection cases and eviction cases that would give people a better shot and reduce the level of their debt. But I really think Peggy's right that we need to use this Justice Gap report to the community as a platform for saying to ourselves as taxpayers, we can no longer afford as a society to shift the burdens of the economy and the health problems onto the poorest people in our communities. How can we be willing to live in a community where people can't afford housing, basic health care, and where actually children go hungry. That's another thing that's been laid bare by the pandemic, is the number of children who have to depend on public resources because their families cannot afford to feed them adequately.
If I may, there's one other area that is a huge issue, and this is the ability of our poor to be able to access financial help or financial institutions. This was so shocking to me, but when I became a trustee, I could not believe how many people could not get a bank account. And as a result, they have to spend sometimes as much as 10% of their paycheck just getting their paycheck cashed. It's disturbing, and we don't have a usury law here in Utah, so that is a huge issue. That's what leads to the growth of payday lenders. And payday lenders have arguments as to why they provide a useful service, and it all comes down to the fact that banks aren't willing to bank to these people. If people of limited means don't even have the privilege of having a bank account or having someplace to put their money, this is what they have to resort to, and we see this over and over again.
So we talked a little bit about maybe how we can't volunteer our ways out of this, and there are these big societal issues, but in terms of public policy and some changes that have been implemented in the past, can we look toward the newer kind of licensed legal practitioner model as something that could help kind of navigate the legal world?
Oh, yes. And that's an excellent model, but in some respects, I mean, that will produce legal services at reduced cost because those practitioners, they require certification in Utah, but they don't have to hold JDs. They don't have to go through law school. They can be trained at much less expense, and they can be very competent in particular areas, because so much of what lawyers do is routine and gets done over and over and over again. And you can train non-lawyers to do that really effectively. The problem is that it's a little bit like our pro bono efforts, which are really robust in the state of Utah. We have a lot of pro bono providers. We have a commission that supervises pro bono activities in all of our judicial districts in the state. We have a great online court assistance program where people could get help filling out forms and facilitate their divorce proceedings and so on. We're doing a lot in our state around the edges. And I do think the limited legal practitioner program is kind of a prelude to what we're going to see more of, which is actually training and maybe ultimately developing certification programs for social workers, for debt counselors, for court staff, for people who can do the routine kind of work at much less or lower cost. So that's really important, but I don't know that it gets at the kinds of things that Peggy and I have been describing.
It's still a Band-Aid to this larger wound that we're dealing with.
The size of the problems are really huge, but I think that hitting the problem with more resources in terms of people being able to get help could have, and I hope would have, the effect of educating a broader slice of society about what we need to be a better society, mm-hmm. about how a living wage is a central component to economic health, and how the absence of it is associated with all kinds of disability in the sense that Peggy's described. That's her comment about the banks. That's something we could regulate by law. Some of it's got to be federal law, which is a little bit trickier. But even at the state level, there are things that we might do to advocate for positive change.
I agree. And I think that, you know, one of the issues too with our existing structure of trying to help through the legal profession and the and pro bono services is that it's not the most efficient way to be dealing with these issues. We have many wonderful programs, and Justice Durham is right. We are at the forefront of a lot of communities in providing pro bono legal services and being ahead of the curve in dealing with our issues as a profession. But the fact of the matter is there's a lot of people who want to do a lot of good, and the programs often overlap and are competing for resources. And when I say resources, I'm not only talking about money, I'm talking about lawyer time. And it also creates confusion in the marketplace. I mean, people are a little unclear as to where they should go for the services that they need.
To maybe wrap it up in terms of these issues that are out there, particularly around the tentacles that debt have into all these different aspects of people's lives, and these larger societal issues, are there any like glimmers of hope? Are there some things that are going on right now that maybe are moving in the right direction, or that maybe we can take some best practices from and maybe expand into like kind of the larger issues that we're having in terms of legal needs across Utah?
The regulatory reform project, that is a very exciting, very new, as yet relatively unknown and untested, but it has enormous potential for bringing to bear. Technological advances are increasing willingness as a community to use electronic resources and things like artificial intelligence and so on to reduce the cost of legal services. But it's interesting to me, I think one of the things that emerges from the conversation between me and Peggy is that we've got to figure out how to do a better job of advocacy and education, of letting people across the board know what they need in the way and what they deserve in the way of financial support and services and legal support and services and social support and services. And lawyers are good people to do that. Lawyers are good advocates. And if we can convince them that one of the things they have to advocate for, in addition to the sort of part that their own profession plays, is that they need to become advocates for the larger community, mm-hmm. and especially mm-hmm. those who live at the poverty line.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, at the Bar Foundation, we had the great fortune of receiving over $2 million from the Bank of America because of inappropriate actions during the last significant recession. We want to be able to look at ways that we can be making systemic changes in the delivery of legal services related to financial problems. And this is one area that the Bar Foundation is going to be serving the community in the next few years. And this is a big reason why we commissioned the needs study that the Utah Foundation has done, because we want to understand where are the unmet needs. And it confirmed for all of us, your study, Sean, confirmed for all of us that there are huge issues with debt. And that's where I think that we're going to be focusing as an organization on trying to fund programs that are going to help with some of the problems that are related to the wealth inequity in our society.
This has been Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. Follow our work at utahfoundation.org.